certainly grateful that each of you is here, especially grateful that Sue Harville's back with us this morning, having been out for several weeks. And she said to express her appreciation to all for their prayers, and we're grateful that we can see those who have been out back with us. I think most of you are aware that we did have the 8 o'clock service this morning and will next Sunday, even though the students are away. We're doing this on a trial basis because several had requested it. I did not get the exact count, but I think we had over 100 this morning at the first service. I mentioned to them, sometimes when there are two services, people say that tends to make two congregations. We don't get to see each other. And I admonished and encouraged them to remain around a little while after the services were over before they left. And I would encourage you to come a little early. You come to Bible study, and we would like for all of you to do that. Come a little early and meet those as they're leaving the 8 o'clock service between that and Bible study and between Bible study and this service. There's an opportunity to meet people and to greet people and to know them. Of course, all back together then on Sunday night, and even with the two services, we can have the togetherness that we desire. Even when Brad is preaching, I come to the 8 o'clock service. I'm afraid I'll miss something. I just like to be there. I enjoy being in the services, and as long as we need to, I'll be glad to preach twice on Sunday morning. Whatever the elders decide after this trial basis, I'll support them in that. Sometimes one is not very many. If you students had a test at school that had 100 questions and you missed only one, I think most of you would jump up and down with joy. 99 out of 100, that's a good score. If you had $100 and you lost one of the dollars, you might be concerned a little bit about losing it, but you probably wouldn't think a lot about it because one, as compared to all the others that are left, is not many. And yet, folks, there are times when one is too many. When we're talking about the safety and the salvation of our children, one not safe and one not saved is one too many. The lesson that I'm bringing this morning that I've announced as balanced parenting came about because of an incident that I was aware of a few days ago and a statement that I heard not too long ago. The incident happened on Wednesday night. I came to my class downstairs a few Wednesday nights ago and walked in. There was an adult in that class that was literally shaking. And I asked what had happened, and he said, "I just almost ran over one of the children under the breezeway." And he was still shaking. I've had that almost happen to me. I think all of us have seen incidents that have concerned us. One hurt child is one too many. And the statement that I heard a few weeks ago that I've heard over and over, something to this effect, we can just count on losing a certain percentage of our young people as they get older. I don't buy that. Oh, I know there is a sense in which it will probably happen in most congregations that not all will remain faithful. But folks, when we're dealing with the safety and the salvation of our own children, we're not dealing with odds. We're dealing with souls. We're dealing with people. And we need to be concerned about each one of them. Let me suggest to you in the outset of the lesson that I realize that I'm not an authority on parenting. The only ones who are authorities on being parents are those who've never had any children. And I've had some, and so I'm not an authority. I do believe, however, that by experience and observation, I have learned a great deal about being a parent. Judy and I had four children, three daughters and a son, that were all fairly close together to the extent that we had four teenagers at home at one time. You don't go through the years with four teenagers at the same time without learning. Whether or not they learned, we did. Now, for almost 3 years, we've had a grandson. I've been told down through the years that my attitude toward parenting and toward children would change when I had a grandchild. I don't believe it has. Maybe the applications have changed as our children get older and as we have grandchildren, but the principles that I believe are involved in being a good parent have not changed at all. And we need to go back to those basic principles and live by them. In the first place today, I want us to think about the value of a child. Psalms 127 says that children are an heritage of the Lord. Fruit of the womb is his reward. Jesus said it'd be better for you to have a millstone tied around your neck and drowned in the depth of the sea than to offend one child. That's how important he thought a child was. Proverbs 17:6 says that a son is a glory to his father and a grandchild is a crown to a man. That emphasizes the value of a child and a grandchild. Again, in the book of Proverbs, in chapter 10, verse 1 and 17:25, we are told that a child who doesn't do what he ought to brings heartache to his father and to his mother, and even brings shame to the father and to the mother. I think all of us realize the value of a child. I would, in the next place, address my remarks to those of you that are younger this morning. Those of you that are younger boys and girls, God has placed a great deal of responsibility upon you and has given you a charge to be the kind of boy and girl that you ought to be. Ephesians chapter 6 emphasizes that you are to honor as well as to obey your dad and your mother. God has always placed a great deal of emphasis upon children obeying their parents. But he has also placed emphasis upon honoring them. Not only does the Bible teach us that children are to obey their parents in Ephesians 6, verse 1 and Colossians 3, verse 20, but it's rather interesting that in at least two of the lists where some of the most outrageous sins are mentioned and terrible people are described in Romans 1 and 2 Timothy 3, those who are disobedient to their parents are included in that list. God's Word points out that in the selection of men to serve as elders and deacons, particularly those who are to serve as elders, that their children are to be in subjection to them, that they are to be faithful in their relationship with their parents, particularly with their father in this case. And so, boys and girls, God's Word emphasizes that you have a responsibility to obey and to honor, be in subjection to those who are the parents. And then God's Word gives a great deal of advice relative to the responsibility of parents. And this responsibility must be accepted if we are to have the kind of balanced parenting that we believe is needed. Parents are told to provide for their children, 2 Corinthians 12:14. To love them, Titus 2:4. And time does not permit for us to even touch the hem of the garment as to what that means. Parents are given the responsibility to guide their children, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, Ephesians 6. And the widow in 1 Timothy 5 was commended because she had brought up children. The wise man in Proverbs 22, 6 said, train up. Notice the idea of the up, suggesting time involved, starting quickly enough and continuing long enough. Parents are told to command their children, at least by the example of Abraham in Genesis 18, 19, where God says, I know that he will command his children in the right way. Parents are admonished to correct their sons and daughters. This is involved in the nurture of Ephesians 6 and specifically mentioned that the fathers according to the flesh have used chastisement, Hebrews 12:9. Eli was condemned in a sense because he had not restrained his sons. 1 Samuel 3:13. And there is passage after passage in the book of Proverbs that emphasizes what we have summed up in the statement, spare the rod and spoil the child. Using the rod there not in the sense of beating, but in the sense of correction. And we must emphasize and we must accept the responsibility that God has placed on parents. During the last several weeks, we've had a lot said on national television and in magazines and newspapers about some of the big problems that we're facing. What can be done about them? We've even touched on them in other lessons. But I have been pleased to hear at least twice in the last week or 10 days someone on a national program make the statement that we've got to get back to emphasizing responsibility at home. I believe those people who are saying that are wise and getting at the root of the matter. We have, in a sense, allowed ourselves to come to the point of expecting the church to teach our children all they need to know about religious matters, and the school to teach them everything they need to know about intellectual matters, and not accept that responsibility at home. The school can be helpful and will, and certainly we need to be concerned about our classes for our young people in the work of a congregation such as this. And all parents ought to be thankful for what is done with our youth program and those that are even preteens and classes and so many things that are helpful. But the fact remains that God placed the responsibility for the rearing of children at the feet of parents. And unless and until we get back to that principle and accept that responsibility, we're going to continue to have more problems than we'll have otherwise. Accepting the responsibility as parents. Now, having said that, I would like for a few minutes to share with you what I believe to be some important ideas in the area of balanced parenting. And I would underscore that word balance. I think that's the key. In fact, in almost every area of life, we have problems when we tend to go to the extreme. We find our greatest happiness and our greatest success when we're able to come away from those extremes and sort of stay in the middle of the road. And I believe that applies as far as being good parents are concerned. We need to have balance. I would preface these next remarks by suggesting to you that there must also be some room for judgment. No two children are alike. When I look at our four, I realize that that is true. And our approach to accomplish the same end result may not always be exactly the same with each child, even within the same family. And the circumstances in different families may be such that there may be different degrees or different approaches relative to some of these, and sometimes those of us who stand on the outside may not understand all the factors that are involved. And so I readily admit and strongly suggest that there has to be left some room for judgment by a specific father or a specific mother or specific parents in dealing with a specific child. But I honestly believe that these suggestions, based upon what I understand God's word to say, can be helpful to all of us. We need balance between child abuse and a child that's turned loose. To one extreme, there is the abuse of a child, even physical abuse and other types of abuses, and it either brings tears to your eyes or makes your righteous indignation rise, or a bit of both, to think about the abuse that is given to some little boys and girls. And yet, to the other extreme is a child that's turned loose. At an early age, with no restriction, with parents who do not know where their children are and sometimes do not care where they are or what they're doing. Somewhere between those two extremes, we need a balance. In the second place, there needs to be a balance between bringing up and provoking not.
It's in the same verse. You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. And Colossians 3:21 says, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Don't provoke, don't push them beyond reason. Sometimes that seems to be the case. But use a balanced approach of discipline to bring them up to be the kind of young ladies and young gentlemen that they ought to be. I don't know where you always draw the line on these points. Sometimes too much of the wrong kind of punishment may provoke a child to anger and to discouragement, and even to the point of having very little desire to be a part of the family. And yet there is the responsibility to bring up. And in that bringing up, there is a balance mentioned there in Ephesians 6, verse 4. Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Admonition suggests words and nurture suggests action. And there needs to be a proper balance. And here is one particular area where I believe each child must be looked at as an individual. Because in some cases, it's easier to talk. In others, you have to get the attention before you can talk. And there is that balance of nurture, which is the same word that's translated chastisement over in Hebrews 12, or chastening, and that admonition, which is the same thing as encouragement. There will be a problem if negative punishment is always the case and there's never a word of encouragement. And there will be a problem if the parents try to just encourage all the time and never deal with anything in a negative way. It is that balance that is indicated here in Ephesians 6 and verse 4. There needs to be a balance as far as time with a child is concerned. We probably, in most instances, lean too far in the direction of spending too little time with our children. Some instances, a father is with a son or daughter only a few minutes within a week's time, a few minutes when they're just together with nothing else to do except to be a father and a child. And yet it's possible, I think I've seen this happen, where a mother or a father will become so obsessed with that child that they do not have time to do other things. And in some instances will even neglect their duties and responsibilities to a mate in order to spend the time with the child, letting that child become the center of attention, sometimes almost replacing God. And so there needs to be a balance as far as time is concerned. I'm sure that working mothers have to deal with this point probably more than others in having to do with the use of time. And trying to decide what are the necessities and how do I weigh those and balance those with the amount of time that I need to be with my children. Balance is the answer. And sometimes it's not easy to bring that answer to focus in the center between some of the extremes. This balance needs to be applied when we think about our relationship to the church. To one extreme, I've had mothers with a new baby say, I'll be back to services when my child is old enough to behave, or when it's old enough that it will not catch any of the diseases that are being spread. To the other extreme, there are those who are almost ridiculous to the extent of bringing a sick child to Bible class and service and saying, we're not going to miss under any circumstances, and nothing will keep us from being there, not even using good judgment when occasions would demand that. Balance is the answer. Relative to the activities and the behavior of children in Bible class and worship, and in between during the times that we made reference to earlier, I believe here again that balance is the answer. The child is brought to the church building by parents who say to him, when we get there, you march straight in and sit down on that seat and don't you move an eyelid. Is probably not going to be very impressed with the value of coming to Bible class and worship. And yet the child that is left to himself, where the parents maybe do not even know where he is, may be the one that would most likely be in the situation where there could be an injury and where the safety is not present. I was present in one congregation a few years ago where there were several older people, some of them on walkers. We had a case where a child running down the aisle, not meaning to do any harm, ran into an older lady and knocked her down. No one involved would have had that happen for anything. And here again, balance is what is needed. 4 or 5 years ago, Nick Boone's son, I believe it was a son, a child, ran up to the podium on the stage at Madison, jumped up with both hands and caught it, and pulled it off and caught his head between the podium and the Lord's table. Thankfully, he recovered. Can you imagine what could have happened? No one intended for there to be any problem. And I certainly don't mean this in any sense to be critical of anyone. I remember back several weeks ago when our grandson was visiting one Sunday that one of the ladies in the congregation said to her son, "I've told you that you cannot be up on the stage." And she looked and my grandson had made it up here. She said, "Well, maybe if he allows it, I hadn't intended to allow it, but he'd made it." And when we do our best, there are going to be those times. And here again, we need to emphasize balance. Try to do what we can to control the situations without, again, leaving the idea of a straitjacket situation with our children when they come to Bible class and worship. I believe there needs to be a balance within the services relative to the children that are here. I encourage mothers to start bringing their babies as soon as they can get out and come. The ones I'm really concerned about are the ones that are not here. And when a child cries in the service, it may be disruptive for a moment, but I'm not as worried about that as I am the one that's at home this morning and not here. But I do believe in this area we need to use balance. I've seen instances where a little child would just move his hand and mother or dad would reach over and slap it. Or there'd be the least of whimpers and immediately take them out. And I had one case in a meeting one time. And it was the local preacher's child. You know, they say preacher's kid. You've heard that. But that child screamed for 20 minutes during my sermon. I would have stopped the sermon and extended the invitation, but they couldn't have heard the number. I don't think anybody got anything out of the lesson. Now here again, let me emphasize, this is where judgment must be used. And my hat's off to you mothers, particularly who work, and with the assistance of the fathers, to train and to bring your children up to where they do know how to behave. And one of the most pleasant things is to see the growth that's taken place. I could give you some examples this morning of tremendous growth that I've seen in some of our younger ones. You almost see it week by week. And this is the way it should be. And the reason that the nursery is provided and the room upstairs is provided is to assist mothers. And mothers, we want to assist you, and we want you to know that we want your sons and daughters here for worship and Bible study. But let's use some balance and some good judgment. And have our goal of training all of us to know how to behave. And here again, children will be different. It'll take longer with some than it will with others. There are many things about my wife that I appreciate. But I especially appreciate what she did in this area of thought with our four. Because there's only 4 years and 4 months between the oldest and the youngest of our four. And I was in the pulpit. One man said to his wife one day as he looked at Judy, he said, "Looks like her husband would come to church with her." But she did such a good job in training them and teaching them, and it took some time, but such a good job. And I appreciate that so much and appreciate what you mothers do along that line. Remember balance, having the right attitude, being sure we're here with our boys and girls, and then use a balanced approach in keeping in touch with them and training them, helping them to grow up, again, so that there won't be a one lost. The same idea is true in school and relative to school activities. I would be concerned if our local school system set a regular event for the schools on Wednesday nights at 7. And I appreciate the fact that we live in a community where there is general respect for what is normally thought of as the times that the churches meet. And yet there may be some times, particularly specific events, that will conflict. And I would admonish parents to use balance and good judgment on this. To one extreme, the parent could take the idea that whatever the child needs to do at school, we'll do that, and if there's no conflict, we'll go to the services of the church. That's not a good approach. But on the other hand, we may be a little bit ridiculous sometimes to the other extreme. Let me give you an example. Back a few months ago, several of our young men in the congregation here were on a baseball team that had made it to the tournament. The tournament was even in another town, and it had been scheduled in such a way that they could not get there to play the game and be present at our regular Wednesday evening service. We talked about it. We decided to meet earlier that afternoon. 10 or 15 people, something like that. We had a devotional service. I believe put God first. And then they went on to that activity that on that particular occasion created a conflict. Now, there are some who would criticize that. And usually it may be those who wouldn't be here Wednesday night no matter what the time is. But I believe that it's the same thing as the reason we have the 5:45 service on Wednesday night. We do that to assist the young people that are at Fried Hardeman to be able to come together for a service and then go ahead and be able to do other activities that they need to do. To me, that's putting God first and using some good judgment. And it may very well be that a lack of good judgment in some of these areas contributes to provoking the child to anger and discouragement. We just need to use good common sense and balance. Most of the time, there won't be many conflicts between school activities and church activities, and when there is a conflict, use good judgment. And most of the time, there will be a way to put God first and still help our boys and girls be where they need to be and do what they need to do. I believe there needs to be balanced parenting in the home itself, in the house where the home is. I have visited in some families where the child felt that he could not touch anything in that house. And I have been in others where it looked like he had touched everything that was in the house. Now, somewhere between, there needs to be some balance. Our homes need to be such that a child looks forward to coming home and believes that that's partly his. And dads and mothers, let me tell you something. One of the greatest compliments to you as a dad or a mother is to have a son or daughter who feels free to bring his friend or her friend home with them. Sometimes maybe not even announced. If somebody needed a place to go home with me, dad and mother will be glad for you to be there. We've got to have that kind of balance where property of others is respected, cleanliness and decency is demanded, and yet where our sons and daughters feel at home when they are at home and feel that they're a part of the family. I believe these ideas can help us in balanced parenting. We need to be careful that we don't demand too much too soon. And yet also careful that we don't start too late. Discipline a child while there is hope, Proverbs 19:18. We need to be careful that we don't punish out of anger, just to vent our own feelings as parents. And yet be careful not to put it off so long that neither the father nor the son remembers what it was about. We need to be careful and have balance in decision making. It's not good to have a 17 or 18 year old young person who doesn't know how to make any decisions because dad and mother's made all of them for him. Neither is it good to have a 10 or 11 year old who makes all the decisions and dad and mother don't care enough to help. It's that balance.